Hello, it is Tuesday, October 28th. We're approaching both Halloween and the winter, the end of the added light that at the end of the day, and the lesser light at the beginning of the day, as daylight savings accomplishes. I was complaining that why don't can't scientists figure out a way for the sun to be more out more of the time for us, because it's difficult, but they don't seem to be able to do that. So I'll be moving to Australia for the winter. No, I wish. Anyway, we're going to meditate for about 20 minutes. I usually give guidance of a sort for the first half or so of that period, and then I let it just fall into quiet so that people can have time to work with their own practice. I've got my sexy voice going with the cold, so don't get too excited. Yeah, thanks, Charmaine. All right, so just settling into your meditative posture, whatever that might be, the advantage of Zoom. You can sit, you can lie down, you can stand, you can walk. And if you can think of another posture, you can do that too. Then you can close your eyes or just lower your gaze, so that you're withdrawing from the visual world, the very consuming and distracting visual world. And when we do that, it's interesting to see what comes up immediately. Is there some feeling on an emotional level or some sensation that becomes prominent, Might close your eyes and realize that you're not sitting comfortably and then want to adjust. So just feeling the body settling in, the sense of releasing, grounding. Feeling the breath moving in the body. And we don't have to start a meditation with the, efforting in a particular way. Some people do find it helpful to do something very ritualistic, like repeating some phrases or working with counting breaths, mantra, certainly can be helpful. So just approaching the beginning of the sitting, however you find it most helpful. The breath is the most commonly suggested object for meditation. So again, something we investigate for ourselves. What's most effective for me to do with my attention to the breath? Do I want to pay attention to the touch of air at the nostrils or the movement of the belly? And there are other areas, subtle areas of sensation, the back of the throat or the even the lower back expands and contracts as we breathe. But what we want to do is choose a particular area or point of sensation and stick with that. as our primary focus. Doesn't mean we're clinging to it, but that we return to it when the mind wanders. This practice is one of training the attention so that instead of being the passive victim of our habitual and impulsive tendencies, we can make intentional choices where we put our attention. Feeling the sensations of breath wherever you're focusing. We try to keep our focus on this raw data of sensation, not the story or judgment, analysis. Those are the habits of mind. To think, to process, to try to understand. But in this practice, we want to learn to be on a more elemental level. It's the essence of pure sensation. There's a way in which we're touching into the essence of our life, of being alive. What is it to be alive? To be alive is to feel, to know, to experience. The habits of thinking are persistent and very often will pull us away from this examination of the essential experience of breath. And so our practice is to notice that. In the most basic terms, it's to see when the mind is wandering and bring it back. Again, guiding the attention with our own volition.
They do that shit all the time, Doug, and then I end up having to fill up gas myself.
Okay. Well, besides just noticing that there's thoughts, we can also, in that moment, make note of the content just briefly, just to see what are the tendencies, what are the habits, where are the places the mind likes to go. And this is a kind of meditative inventory, where we're Seeing into the mind. Seeing how the mind is interpreting and processing reality, seeing how the mind tries to escape, to entertain us, to solve the world for us. All of this can be seen in just a brief moment. We don't have to sit there going through a litany of thoughts and examinations, just to glance, see what's there, and then come back to the breath. If all this becomes too complicated and start to get tangled up, just keep it simple. Pay attention to the breath and return when you notice the mind has wandered. And I have a topic I want to explore, but a couple of little things I would toss in here. I'm just noticing, like, just a couple comments about being sick. I don't know if anybody out there has got a cold, but when you do, first of all, just realizing this morning that, my attitude about how I feel is that when I'm sick, it's not normal. And as though there's some like normal state that I'm normally in, not really realizing that or recognizing that, my states are changing all the time. I wake up in one state and, as the day goes on, I go through many different mental and physical states, emotional states, and but that way of kind of prioritizing or making correct that non-sick state, and then, oh, this is wrong, rather than just like, oh, this is the state as it is right now. So helpful for me in a way of just kind of accepting how I'm feeling when it's unpleasant. And the other thing that, as a drug addict, it's so interesting for me because, like, I'm taking drugs and seeing how I take drugs, which is in this very like disciplined manner. Like, I was not somebody who would just like guzzle a bottle of booze. I would like drink, and I would pace it, and I would take drugs, just so that I could maintain. And it was always that thing of like, I'm in control. I'm controlling this. I'm controlling my cold. I'm controlling my high. And just seeing these illusions that we go through, and it really reminds me of the illusion I had of control in my addiction, and because of that particular trait, that allowed me to stay in denial for longer because I, felt that I was in control. I mean, who doesn't? Anyway, so I was thinking about, on a particular topic today, a phrase that is in the Pali Canon and in the suttas of early Buddhism, and I thought it was in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, and then I went and looked and realized it's not. It's a variation in that sutta, but it's actually in the Chula Gosinga Sutta, which is one I wrote about in my book Living Kindness, that I recommend everybody purchase. I don't recommend that. I don't care if you read it or not. I just want you to buy it so I can get my $1 of royalties from that. Sorry, that's really, I shouldn't talk like that. But so there's a line where the Buddha asks these monks if they are abiding, diligent, ardent, and resolute. And I think it's a really an interesting combination of traits of things to investigate and consider. When I hear the word diligent, I was thinking about what it brings up for me. It kind of reminds me of like being in school and the goody goodies would be diligent, They would like do all their homework and their handwriting would be really clear, and they would do their chores at home without complaining, and they were diligent, and I was not diligent, Ardent, though, has more of a feeling of passion, of engagement, of really caring. It's associated with love, right? Ardor. And then resolute, that consistency of showing up and just determination. And so I thought, first of all, that this was a good, I mean, in this kind of Buddhism recovery space, whatever concept, it's a good collection of terms that applies to both. If we want to maintain our recovery and have a recovery that blossoms into really a fulfilling life, we need these qualities. So just to talk a little bit about each of them, diligence, I associate with effort, which is an aspect of the Eightfold Path, and nothing happens without effort. If we're just thinking about things, thinking about getting sober, thinking about meditating, which those are two things that people tend to do a lot without acting on them. So the diligence is required to make the effort. And I guess diligence has this sense of like really being determined and working with a certain kind of precision. I think of it as, you're doing everything. You're not skipping a step. It's not like, oh, well, I did, the first step and then I started to meditate. It's like you go through all 12 steps, right? That would be diligence to me, and continuing to show up. But diligence, if it doesn't have ardor, if it's not ardent, can be mechanical and can kind of look good, but not really accomplish much. This is something we can see in others, maybe in ourselves, of like, I'm just gonna show up and do the necessary steps, and it's gonna look like I'm working really hard, but I don't really care, and I'm not really engaged. And so it really needs that ardor that I think for me, of these three elements, the ardency is maybe the most important, because it's the one that arouses our emotion, our emotional engagement, our passion. And even if we slip with our diligence at times, if we have that passion, we will get back into it. Even if our resolve slips a little bit, there will be that emotional engagement. So the ardor is that passion that we aren't just working the steps or practicing the Dharma, but we love them, and that's how I feel about them. I love this path. It's not just something I'm doing to, oh, so I can stay sober, not get arrested or something, or not get liver cancer or whatever. I'm doing it because I love it, and I do think like that is one of the turning points of recovery. Like most of us don't come in here thinking I'm just gonna love being sober. Those steps look so great. I can't wait to do them. It's something that grows with time. We'd start to do the work just because we have to, and with time we fall in love with it, hopefully. So those two together, when you have that, when you're working it, and there's a passion, that really that's a powerful combination. And I'd say that combination then naturally leads to wanting to share it. Because you're working at it, but you love it, and you're really feeling connected to it, and that's what leads us to want to share the Dharma, wants to share our recovery, to sponsor people, to be of service, and to be engaged in the really meaningful ways that this work takes on. So then the resolute, that's the sustaining this, in the Metta Sutta, after the Buddha describes how we should practice loving kindness, he says one should sustain this this recollection, and the term recollection is just a translation of the same word that we use for mindfulness. So one should sustain this mindfulness, one should sustain this effort. And we know, I mean, this is the bottom line of certainly of recovery. If we don't sustain it, we just fall back. And unsustained recovery isn't recovery at all. When you sort of measure, as we do, our recovery, we do it by time. We don't sort of say, okay, you've been sober for 10 years, but did you have any, did you make any mistakes during the time? Have you been depressed or lost a job or broken up a relationship? Because if you did, then it's not really recovery. We don't think like that. We know that it's the sustained through whatever happens, the sustained effort and continuation of that work that, is essential to it, is irreplaceable. And I often, like, when I'm asked to speak at a meeting, and asked for a topic, I often make the topic showing up, which to me is resolution. It's continuing to show up, and it's that, the hot with the on the with the highs, with the lows, we continue to show up. And that was just the opposite of what I would do in my active addiction. If things got too difficult, I'd run away. If they were too pleasant, I would get more drunk to celebrate them. That was like there was just no real effort to maintain anything wholesome in my life. That might be an exaggeration. There was some effort to maintain something wholesome, just not enough, and too many other things. But showing up for me is just the key. I've been doing this meditation practice for a long time and gone through a lot of things in it, like some pleasant, some unpleasant, some, neither pleasant nor unpleasant, but I feel like the only thing that allows me to learn is the consistency. Not the only thing, the one of the main things that helps me to learn is that consistency, because that allows me to see the variety of experiences and start to put them in a perspective and see the causality within them. How did that happen? What brought that about? What made that end? One of the things that I became aware of when I was about 2 years sober, and I hadn't had a drink in 2 years, and one thing I noticed was, like, every time I go to sleep at night, or I should say, every time I wake up in the morning, I remember going to sleep the night before. And that was like a weird thing, right? Like that. Oh yeah, I didn't used to always have that, but there was something else with that continuity, which was that, like, that memory is like, I was able to connect things over time. And I think that in when I would get, particularly when I would get drunk, but really probably being high, smoking dope as I did, like, on a regular basis and for years on a daily basis, that intoxication had a way of breaking the kind of learning process, the educational process of aging, if you will. That With time, there's the traditional idea of the elder is someone who has lived through and seen a lot in their life and has come to understand things, so that wisdom has arisen through sustained experience, through long experience. But when you get intoxicated, it breaks the accumulation of that wisdom. I mean, this is just sort of a Kevin concept. I don't know if people will relate to it, but that's how it felt to me when I was 2 years sober. It's like I'm starting to be able to see how things work. I'm starting to be with life in a way that I can start to put things together. Because when you would break up consciousness in these ways, blacking out literally, then it's like you're starting again, trying to figure out how the world works and how, karma works, and what's a good way to approach handle life. And so resolution, that third quality. So diligent, ardent, and resolute. I think a beautiful set of qualities to reflect on, and to see we're all imperfect, and so none of us are going to be perfectly diligent, perfectly ardent, and perfectly resolute. But it does give us sort of another kind of inventory process, like, oh, where are my strengths? Where are my weaknesses? What could I work on? What do I, or what is falling through the gaps? I hope that's a useful reflection for you guys. And I'd be happy to open it up and see if there are thoughts or comments. Thank you. Hey, Vicky, hi. I saw some nodding from you at one point.
Okay, great, great business. Wonderful words. God. So when you were talking about ardent, it really touched me, I gotta say. And we talk about gratitude, but this is something deep. There's a it's the law of, the love of program slash dharma. It's contagious for one thing, which is awesome. And being in conversation in a sangha or in a 12-step community, the growth, of connection is really something. And that is partially sponsorship, partially, I've got some reading groups now, and people are very happy, to be in meetings, to be in groups, to be included, to be in conversation, right? In this, this rich conversation. And it's part of the ardency, and part of, just like getting help being resolute, getting help being diligent. We've got a little text group now with some people on it where it's like we're just texting. I meditated today, check, some little thing, right? And it's really helping people to be diligent, to show up. And on the flip side, I'm in conversation with a guy who is so depressed. I mean, just like, and he's in trouble, and he says, he's in trouble. And it's kind of like, well, can you how do you have a spiritual practice, and how can you engage in that? And it's like, it's very hard for him to keep going, right? He's like, yeah, I know, but to get the energy together, to get, I mean, energy is part of this, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And I don't know, And then there's this poor woman here in Truth or Consequences, you know, who's struggling with drug addiction. You know, she came by this morning and she was supposed to help John, and she's like, "Can you give me $20? I got to go pick up something and I'll be right back." And you know, there goes the $20, right? But it was so sad, you know, really so sad. And anyway, you got anything to say to, you know, it's sort of like live and let live, live and let die. I don't know, you know. I mean, I feel like especially the woman, you know, it's like,
Yeah.
wow.
No, I mean, I don't have any solutions for addiction. I mean, it's a mysterious disease that I've never viewed what I was offering as a cure for addiction or even a program for recovery, but more to help people who have established their abstinence or whatever stability. I mean, the thing that when you bring up the depression and energy, that's really, rings home, rings true. Anyway, for me, which is like the great, challenge of depression, that the solution for it is to get up and be energetic and do something. And depression is inherently draining, physically and mentally. And so, there are times when it's just, medical intervention is necessary to break out of really, those acute states. But also, yeah, if when it's not that acute, our intention, our resolve, our diligence can maybe, get us up and to literally moving the body. I mean, that's what, Dan Siegel, writing prescription for depression, 45 minutes of exercise a day and handing it to his patients, obviously that's not the cure for depression, but it's to get the energy moving so that you can start to work with the underlying causes and the external causes as well, the real life challenges that often, trigger those states. So but I mean, these are all words, you can talk about it, but you're in those states. It's very consuming because there's a big story, and that's the part that has to be interrupted first, is the story that's about what's wrong with you and whatever the unwholesome, negative, self-destructive story is that can take many forms, but that can be enough to keep you from even making the effort to accumulate some energy. So the first thing is to be able to put aside the story, and to say, I'm not going to believe this. I'm not going to take this on as the truth. It may have some meaning or validity, but let me not allow that to cripple me. It ain't easy. That's
Okay, yeah, right. Yeah. And he, like, you know, it strikes me there's a parallel between, you know, like actual relapse, like picking up a drink, or, you know, like the woman who was here with the $20, you know, it's like, yeah, going, you know, that thing. And the kind of mentality that I'm kind of seeing in this guy, where he's like going along and he's doing okay and he's got his thing down and he's coming to meetings, and then all of a sudden he falls off the map, you know, and then he doesn't drink or drug, but then he's back going, holy shit, man. You know, that the thing where the mind just t seems to t take him out.
Lack of
Yeah,
resolution,
the story. Okay,
if we're
so
going
the
to put it
story.
in the three, and that's where,
Okay.
to me, like the precepts and boundaries And, I show up no matter what kind of stuff is so important.
Yes,
Because if I'm
right.
listening to my
Yeah,
head,
okay. Okay. Okay.
like this morning, I would have been like, the class, I don't, why do I have to fucking do this class again? I'm sick. I've just been working really hard. I'm just going to sleep, like whatever. And, for me, it's like, no,
Right,
and a little bit of Catholic guilt goes a long way in this regard, some feeling that, you can't, that's, don't be bad. But again, it's like, it's easy, you and I talking about a third person, it feels a little, too easy.
I know, right? Yeah. Okay, good.
We'll solve
So,
his
anyway,
problems.
yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Well, this is, but this is, I have an idea, though.
Oh,
Thank
good.
you. I,
Okay, Becky.
yeah, I appreciate the, yeah, I appreciate the direction. So
Yeah,
thank you.
thanks.
Yeah. Thanks. Yep.
Any other thoughts? Go, Anna, hello, dear. Yes, unmute yourself.
Yeah, hi.
Nice
Yeah,
to
I'm like,
see you.
yeah, really good to see you too.
Yeah.
Yeah. This word ardency also, Vicky,
Yeah.
thank you for putting voice to that. It really was. Of all three of them, maybe you said this, but it fuels the effort,
Yeah.
the care, the love, the joy of everything that has evolved, in recovery and in the Dharma and in both. And I'm not all, yeah, I'm, but I'm not always ardent. I mean, I don't feel that way because mind states take over,
Yeah.
so you guys are describing a severe form, and which I've had in the very
Yeah.
past. And so but to remember that even that comes and goes, and that's okay. Like, I had a really lazy day yesterday, or the day before, whatever, Sunday,
Nice.
so yeah, nice, right?
Yeah.
And not criticizing myself for it in some way, which is even nicer. So anyway, I don't know, I just wanted to say hi, really.
Yeah, thank you.
I get what you're putting down, and I'm
Well, and I'm glad you brought back ardency. And I'll mention that, Joseph Goldstein in his book Mindfulness has a section on ardency.
like the
And
first
so,
section, the first thing you
and
talked
it's
about.
one of the things that made me think about this as a
Yeah.
topic. So just for
Yeah.
people who are interested in viewing that. But what occurs to me as we talk about this is that diligence and resolution are things that we can kind of force to happen in a way. We can just, push our way through them. But ardency is the thing that only comes from the heart, that only, and it's it, we can't sort of force ourselves to be in love with recovery or with Buddhism. And so it's kind of the, well, I don't know. There's a lot that, that means. Part of which is that we're powerless over it, that we, and that if we find it, we're lucky, and that we, and we often, for those of us who've got this beautiful life through this, and we see someone who can't get it, there's this feeling like, oh, if I could just give you this passion that I have, this, because it's like a talent more than it is something you can develop. It's like something you're kind of given. It's the gift of recovery, if you will, the love of the of the practice of the recovery program. And so, in a way, it kind of, I find it a little sad, that because that I've encountered lots of people who can't find that, and they show up and they do all the work and they're diligent, but then they're lacking in the passion. They're lacking in really wanting to do it, to finding the joy in it, seeing the depth, the meaning, that this is really the most valuable way to live their life. It's just they're trying to do it because they know it's the right thing to do, but they can't kind of develop that ardency. So interesting. It's a fun topic. I mean, I'm enjoying just bringing it up and talking about it and reflecting on it. One of the things about this work that I do and that you guys do, but I mean, I do it as a profession, is playing with language and exploring just not just language, but ideas, right? Take in a, because you can hear it like, okay, happy, joyous, and free or something, and just go, okay, good, fine. But then it's like, oh, wait, let me just, interrogate that term, and really try to unpack it. I'm using all this, I love this kind of language, interrogate it, unpack it. But it does capture what I'm trying to do here. So I like those terms as much as I find them a little annoying too. But language, I love language. I mean, I'm a writer, and so whatever, but I felt when I was starting to really work with Buddhism and the 12 steps and trying to, unpack that connection, I felt what was really guiding me was the Shakespeare class that I took as an undergrad at UC Berkeley, where I had this professor who would make us write our essays about a word or phrase in one of the plays. We couldn't, it wasn't like about the play or the characters. It was like you had to just like pick a word and see how it was like used over and over, or how a certain just one phrase, and it forced me to think on this more microscopic level of language that became really fascinating when you start to be like, oh, powerless, what does that mean? Turning your will over. Well, okay. Got to really think about that, So, it's fun.
Yeah, thanks for helping us unpack it because 12 steps in the lens of the Dharma. Because I have to say, my ardency, upon finding meditation and then starting to study and reflect and practice more, that has sustained me throughout the last, so it's 15, so God, how many years it's been sustaining me. And it's because of the addition of the Dharma, So thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Anne. All right, I guess Carol, see your hand up. You're being very
Hi.
patient. Hello.
Everyone, thanks for this great topic. Diligent, ardent, and resolute. Those would be great traits, to add to your character, if you could be that all the time or think about it during the day as you go about what you do. But they kind of reminded me of the principles of AA. And one thing, Kevin, that drew me to your writing and your philosophy is that you connect Buddhism and the steps. And whenever I can find connections in my life, it makes my life more meaningful, purpose driven. And I kind of see like diligence being similar to integrity in step five, ardency, step eight, brotherly love. That's the principle we learn when, we're willing to be humble and write down the names of the people that we have to give our love to in the next step. And then being resolute kind of reminds me of the perseverance, which is the principle of step 10. We need to continue to do this, to persevere, to be resolute and make things right in our life when they go wrong. Thanks for helping me see another connection. So I appreciate that. Take
Great.
care.
Yeah, thank you. That's great. Always fun to make those connections. I mean, I would also be like resolute is practicing these principles in all our affairs too. Saw Mickey ha having her physical hand up.
Oh,
It
hi, can
looks like you're
you hear
unmuted
me?
too. I can hear you. How
Oh,
are
good.
you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm
Nice to see
sick.
you. Great. So I hope you feel better
I
soon.
will,
I know I
or else I
that.
won't. I don't know.
Right. And that's how it is. So when I had this bout of depression, and my psychiatrist said, do something every day that you used to enjoy. And I thought, well, it was very helpful, because I would bicycle and cry, but I would get on my bicycle and
You would bicycle and cry, did you say?
I would get on my bicycle like for fun, but I would be crying because I was
I
depressed.
love that.
Anyway, you know, and doing it anyway is like
Yeah,
eating my
doing
dinner.
it anyway.
It's like I don't always want to go to meetings, and I
No.
don't not go. Well, I don't go to a lot of meetings, but I go to my regular meetings, and I go because I go. And if I don't feel like going, it's okay. I don't want to break what's not broken. I don't want to, you know what I mean? It's like
Yeah.
work for so long that I just put one foot in front of the other and do it, you know. And if I don't like it, it's okay. It's an hour of my life. And the same with meditation. I mean, I sit every day, and some days I think, oh fuck, I have to sit. But I sit, you know what I mean? And it's just like not drinking without a program is still better than drinking. You know, it's like we have it in some ways. I see things as all or nothing. Like if you love the program, you'll stay sober. If you don't drink, you'll stay sober, really. So we have all these, you know, I have all these like parameters about what's the right way to meditate and what's the right way to stay sober. And I try to reduce it to just get on the pillow and just don't get loaded. It's worked well in my life. It's worked well. But I do go to meetings and I do sit every day. It's not like I just can't punish myself for my lack of resoluteness and my lack of enthusiasm. But the discipline is what has kept me going.
No, I mean, that's when the ardor fades,
You still go.
the resolution must continue. Yes.
Right. I mean, and we're
It's
all
kind of like
different.
marriage, if you will, you know.
Well, right. Some.
I
My,
mean, some. I mean, obviously, everybody's marriage is different,
right.
so.
Everybody is different
And
also. The
everybody
other
is
thing is that I
different.
think people are like me, but they're not.
Right.
They're like them. And I really forget
They're a
about that.
little like you, but maybe
Well, they have two
not
legs,
exactly
maybe.
like you.
Right. Nice to see you.
You too, sweetie. Well, thank you guys. Gonna hang out with Monica, because she's gonna train me to pin myself so that I can record talks when she's not here. Because those who've been here when she wasn't here know that the talks don't get recorded, because I don't want to record everybody's face on Zoom. And so this, not great tech person myself will be trained by a more techie person. So thank you all, and it is time. Now is the time for you to leave the meeting if you aren't Monica.
Well, thank
All
you.
right,
Thank you, Kevin.
good. Thanks.
Thanks, Monica.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Monica.
Right,
Hello,
well,
Kevin.
Paolo.
Kevin, can I ask you something real quick?
Okay,
Recovering
okay.
on Sundays in Berkeley is reading Recovering Joy. And we would like to invite you to
Lost him.
He's gone. I don't know why.
And I ejected the Stephanie person who was staring at us.
Oh, I was kind of worried. Did somebody try to break into the meeting, or is it just somebody with a
I don't know. I just immediately muted everybody. I think it might have been somebody who was like working, and they
gotta
were
get
doing
gas
two
and stuff.
things.
Yeah,
Because I mean, I was immediately like, oh, are we being bombed? And when I muted everybody, then it was fine. And
all
so,
right. Yeah, so I lifted up the security stuff in case I need to lock the meeting. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm
I mean,
diligent. Diligent.
my thinking is that if if somebody gets in and we can't get them out, that I just close the meeting and then restart the meeting and just let people in one at a time.
You can lock the meeting too.
But if somebody's already in, Can you lock them?
They can't post. They can't share. They can't do
Should
anything.
we let Paolo back in so he can?
Oh,
Are
I think.
you in a hurry?
Oh, no, I
All
am
right.
not.
Go
Hang
ahead,
on.
Paolo. You dropped off and
He was
so.
trying to
Right,
ask you
I'm gonna shut
something.
the video off. That should help. Yeah,
So you wanted
we
to know if I would come to the
Yeah, discuss with our
Recovery Dharma group down at 924 Gilman.
and discuss with Reverend Joy. Lead the meditation, discuss the books some, and then leave us on some time for our regularly scheduled shares, which you can stay for or.
I mean, sure. Why don't you? Do you have my email? Can you email me about it or something? I can find a date that works.
And if I don't, if I'm not in contact with you, Christina,
Okay. Whatever you said, I can't hear you, but
oh, okay. Can you hear me, Kevin?
a little bit.
We'll do. We'll do. We'll get. We'll
Okay.
be getting. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I'd be delighted to come down. I mean, you've bought 70 books.
And thank you for I was only, I only managed to catch a little bit of today's meeting, but it was more impactful. What I did manage to hear was even more impactful than
Cool.
usual. I can the book on the depression. It's gonna be nice. Thank you, Kevin. I'll let you be now.
Okay, thanks, man. Take care. Okay, then.
So what
So
I'm gonna do is,
you're going to send me a little document that tells me how to do this.
oh, I can do that too, but
That would be ideal because, I like a good, do this, do this. Because otherwise, I'm not going to be, unless I write it down, I'm not going to remember. But
right.
let's go through it first because it's not that complicated, right?
All right, I'm gonna unpin you so
Okay.
you can try
Oh, I'm not
to.
pinned. Are we
Oh
still
yeah.
recording? No, you
Oh,
stopped.